Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Remember the ups and the downs of your first love. Well, if you're a parent with preteens or teenagers, do you know what to do when your children experience the same butterflies and the heartbreak that you remember from your first love? Well, on this Valentine's Day, we have advice for parents whose children are struggling with this very emotional rite of passage. My guests are therapist and educator Aisha Tayemba and licensed medical health therapist Joseph Williams. If you have a child experiencing their first love right now, give us a call. The lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Aisha, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And Joseph, thank you for coming in. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I wouldn't be any other place on Valentine's Day.
I don't believe that, but you know, but I got to tell you, you know, Aisha, this is a hand on the back of your hand on your forehead, clutch the pearls kind of conversation. And I know, I know that you, for example, you have a teenager? Your daughter's
grown.
In her 20s.
Grown.
Yeah, but you teach middle school students.
Middle and high. Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. You have my prayers.
Thank you.
I want to ask you, is there a difference between your first love and a crush?
That really sort of depends on who you're talking to. That depends on the child and what they're able to tell you about it. As adults, we clearly distinguish these things much differently than children do. But the way that they feel, those feelings are big, and they really don't necessarily have the language to distinguish all of that very early on unless we give it to them. So a lot of that depends on how we help them to understand.
Yeah, and see, Joseph, I can just imagine the heart palpitations, the cold sweats, the nervous knees of a teenager, and that little brown skin girl and with the curls and everything. Mm-hmm. This is really a difficult time, obviously, not just for the children, but for the parent. How should parents react when a child comes home for the very first time and talks about this first love / crush?
I think the initial reaction should be, you should be receptive as a parent. We are here to actually assist our youth and our children with coping, with understanding what love is, and we are the first example of everything. And so a lot of times I think it's most important to be open to understand and create that avenue of communication for your child so they can be honest with you about the way they're feeling and you can assist them with processing. Not processing your drama, but helping them understand what that feels like and making that be a wonderful experience for them. We're just talking about crushes, we're talking about liking somebody, we're talking about potentially dating someone. Make that an innocent dynamic on the initial part of it. And then from there, as they start to open up and understand what those feelings are, you can help them process a bit more. Because eventually it may close off.
That's true. Aisha, if we can get in your daughter's business.
Oh.
And when she came home with her first crush slash love conversation. What was that like for you?
So because I teach, I stay very close to those feelings all the time and remember very much what it was like for me. So it's never far away. So I'm always sort of empathetic when those kinds of things come home. So it was exciting and interesting and kind of like what was stated just a moment ago, you know, go into it receptively, right? And feel what they're feeling with them. It was a good thing.
Oh, okay. Did she ask you for advice?
No, actually, she didn't. She was very clear about the fact that she liked someone, and she didn't need anything initially. She asked for advice now, but she didn't need any advice going in.
Now.
It's kind of like, right, this person is here. I like them. You know, they're cute or they're fun or something like that. It wasn't because she was confused about them in any kind of way. So, no, there was no ask for advice at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about parenting your child's first love. How do you handle it while they're trying to figure out how they handle it? If you have a child experiencing their first love, give us a call right now with 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, Joseph, mm-hmm. It's one thing to be open and receptive to what your child is telling you, but what do you tell parents who may not be so open-minded because, you know, the first thing that a lot of parents think about is, you know, particularly if it's a teenager who is, you know, in the midst of puberty, yeah. And you want to think about, oh my goodness, here, put this nickel between your legs, girl, and no, you don't need to talk to that boy or you say the same to the boy. You just leave that girl alone and don't. What kind of conversations should you have with the child?
I can only keep it with the work that I do. You know, just with my experience doing therapy with youth as well as currently doing therapy with adults. Some of the bigger concerns have to do directly with sex. We skip over the liking phase and we go into responsible sexual behaviors. And I've had to have these conversations with parents, both men and women. Our youth, in comparison to when I was coming up, I'm in my mid-40s, they're more sexualized. And there's so much stuff they're being inundated with through art and entertainment, through music. So that is a huge fear. But I always believe that teaching your child or your teenager or a person who's of age to consent responsible behaviors and what that looks like. I believe that if you create a space of punitiveness, it will make your child sneak around and do inappropriate things. The most important love is the love that comes from those caretakers that care about that child, where they won't feel like they're running somewhere else to get it, and they will also keep at least some level of a private, open line of communication when it comes down to their sexual behaviors and health. So I've had to have those types of conversations. I think the most traumatizing thing that I've experienced with a lot of parents tends to be the daughter.
Really?
The daughter. The daughter is, you know, forced, you know, into, you know, birth control. I have teenage girls now saying, you know, I don't want to be on birth control. I don't want to gain weight. I don't want to get fibroids, which, you know, we don't have any proof that causes that. I don't want to put any misinformation out there. But the youth now are understanding of concerns that their sisters and their aunts go through, where they're now like, I don't want to have to do that. I'm not interested in doing that. Can I just have a boyfriend and have a little friend I can hold his hand and talk to him on social media? You know, so that's a bigger concern for me, just the forced the forcing with the daughters and how they really monitor them. And I feel like that same level of monitoring, if we're going to do that, we need to kind of teach our young boys that same level of responsibility too.
You know, and Aisha, the language of first love is a little different. I mean, it's one thing to do Burt Bacharach's Close to You. It's another thing to do Beyonce's Cuff It. So, the whole outlook, as Joseph was just saying, is our children are grown long before we want them to be grown.
Mm-hmm.
they do have access to far more than we do, especially with the advent of the internet and social media. And so it's up to us to stay on the pulse of what they have access to. What are they on? What are they listening to? And that's something that even my parents did with me. And my father often was the one who introduced me to things before instead of waiting for me to find these things. And then we would talk about them. And so creating that space to be able to engage freely, not just waiting until someone comes home to tell you about somebody that they're interested in, but really being able to build that language out from the way that you engage in your relationships. Like Joseph said earlier, you are their first example. Also, having the room to be able to talk about consent beyond relationships. Consent is a part of every relationship that we have, so not waiting until they're engaging interpersonally or romantically. Preach. And so it helps these things to be much more of an organic and consistent part of the way that they engage instead of just waiting until they kind of crash into these things as kids and they have better tools for processing by themselves, with each other, because they're always with their peers in some way. And with us,
if I may, I want to jump in. Sis just said, I believe that with the access, right, we have so much of a. With all due respect, that we're sitting on radio, not necessarily WHUR, but we have music that really glorifies toxic behaviors. Mm-hmm. And so we have songs that are being marketed as empowerment, but they're prompting people to engage in toxic behaviors. And as a therapist, I mean, do you know how much stuff I have to combat on social media with somebody sitting up in a car with a McDonald's cup, you know, tell this man to do this, and then I got to help this client process her choice based on what she saw online. Mm-hmm. Or we have, you know, other artists, I don't know if I can name them, like Summer Walker and all these people, you know, with toxic songs that, you know, that it becomes popular to be toxic towards a relationship. So nowadays we have to talk our children through ghosting, through blocking, through, you know, subtweeting and, you know, and triple text and double texting and all of these things that they're being taught to do in order to engage in a proper relationship. You know, and the way that they're communicating, that's the most important concern that I have when it comes to the youth. We communicate differently. We have dynamics where in my generation, we communicated more organically. We met organically. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, you know, a lot of people are meeting online. Statistically, they said that our youth have a better chance of meeting organically than much older people, but they do connect with others online. They look at pictures and they can gauge the personality from a picture, I guess. That's the trend today. So a lot of times we have to be able to walk them through those steps. And just like the young lady just said, you know, we have to be on the pulse of what those things look like. Yeah. You know, we have to be able to, how do you talk your child through ghosting when you're managing through being ghosted 10 years ago from your now ex-husband?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And I think that's the whole point of this conversation is that if you are still struggling with, you know, your own relationships and you have children who are now growing and beginning that sense of maturity in their early teen years, mm-hmm. and they are now asking you questions literally or figuratively as they try to navigate it, it becomes a conundrum, mm-hmm. I think, for a lot of people. Let me go to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. LaShawn calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Sean. LaShawn, what's on your mind? LaShawn, go right ahead. Turn your radio down. Go right ahead,
okay.
Please.
Okay, I just turned it down. I was just going to say I'm an educator, an educator, so I keep an open mind and I deal with, I teach older teenagers as well. So with my grandson, because I'm a grandmother, mother of a 16-year-old grandson who's starting to date. And I just try to be open-minded and transparent and help them through, you know, with communicating with the female's mother as well. We always communicate back and forth, like when they want to go out on dates, you know, just assist them. You know, I drop them off, I pick them up, you know, they tell me where they want to go. If I think it's a place where they should be, then, you know, okay, y'all can do that. But if not, then I say, no, well, you can't go there because I don't think that's safe. Or, you know, just try to assist them.
LaShawn, hold on, because I need to ask you a question. And I need you to hold on because I've got to take a real quick break. So can you hold on for me?
I can.
Thank you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. It's a Valentine's Day conversation. How do you as parents manage the emotional ups and downs of your child's first love? Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. Still taking your phone calls at 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. It is Valentine's Day, and we're continuing to share advice for parents whose children are experiencing the ups and downs of their first love, struggling with this very emotional rite of passage. My guests are therapist and educator Aisha Tayemba and licensed medical health therapist Joseph Williams. If you have a child who is experiencing their first love, good or bad, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We have LaShawn from D.C. on the line. LaShawn, the reason why I wanted to keep you on the line was because it's good that you are, you know, watching your grandson, but you were just talking about dating and where they want to go and what you want to do. I'm talking about the emotional process of you know, how do you as a grandmother manage his emotions during this dating process? If he has said to you something about someone that he really, really likes, it's not about the movies or going to the park, but what is he saying about the object of his desire, if he's had one?
Right. Well, I don't think we have gotten that far. I mean, I know it's the young lady. I know he likes the young lady, and we haven't got to the emotional part yet. But, I mean, in order to get to the emotional part, I think you have to, you know, take it all in and just meet them where they are now, until we get to that part. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes up, I have to use, you know, I think I would use my own stories to try to, you know, engage in a respectful conversation without, you know, with trying to understand what he will be going through, as opposed to what, you know, how it was when I was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. I think, you know, right now, and I think, you know, I just haven't got to that part of it yet.
Well, keep it. Well, if he's 16, keep an eye on it, because trust me, it's going to happen tomorrow.
Well.
Yeah. LaShawn, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Kebra calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Kebra. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to chime in on a conversation.
Sure.
And I think it's very important to prepare yourself beforehand. So making sure you're being open-minded and having conversations with your children so they're comfortable coming to you in the first place. Because sometimes we just don't know how they feel. And then secondly, making sure we're doing the things we need to do as parents so that we are ready and prepared to respond and give the children what they need versus responding and reacting in a way that's responding to maybe something that triggers us, or that's something that may be a past trigger from something we experienced.
Do you have children, Kebra?
Yes, I have preteens. So we're not there yet, but I'm trying to stay ready.
Stay ready. So you don't have to get ready. Okay. No. Kebra, thank you so much. Aisha, this is the thing that I think is so important when, you know, when talking to the grandmother, for example. I would think that when, as a father myself, that when your child comes home and says, I like someone, do you think it would be helpful to ask why they like them?
Hmm.
I would question the why so much initially, as to clarifying what they mean when they say, like, a lot of times we're engaging in conversations and we're using the same words, but we're using them differently, or we mean something different than the other person. And so getting that child to explain, what does like mean to you? What does it feel like to you? What does it look like? How do you respond to a person that you like? What are you feeling moved to do around or with this person that you like, so that you understand what they're talking about? And then to be helpful and transparent, for you to also explain your definition of it, so that if there are some variations in the way that you're both using the word, you can clarify for one another and kind of build this working lexicon between you, so that when you're talking, you really know what it is that you're talking about.
Aisha, that was amazing. I totally agree with that. I don't even know if I can follow that up, because I believe that clarification is most important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like the sister just said, you know, it's about going eye level with your child, going eye level with your teen, and recognizing their world and being able to figure out exactly what they mean and how that feels, and letting them have that experience, letting them experience those emotions, and oftentimes, you know, supporting them, because the more you do that, the more they will be able to express their feelings too. So I believe that, you know, just even with the grandmother supporting her grandson in his relationship, that's amazing. And see, that will set a tone for future relationships. You know, I believe that, just like she said, like and like could be two different things. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of being able to understand the child's world, the teen's world, the young adult's world, and what that means for them, and allowing them to have that experience.
And that's what I mean by why. I think when you talk to the child, and certainly, you know, why may be an oversimplification, but what is it that you like about, you know, little, you know, Johnny or little Quisha or whatever her name is? Yeah. And, I mean, is it, well, yeah, because, yeah, she's pretty, because she has, you know, curls, or she can sing, or, but I think a lot of children, you know, particularly, you know, right in that teenage year, when they're still trying to figure out, if you ask them, well, what do you like about him or her, a lot of times you may get a you know, you may get a shrug.
Yeah.
And I think it is helpful to try to bring that out to help them to express themselves, so that, as you said, they can have an understanding of what it is, you know, that they're feeling. And this is on the good side. We're going to get to the bad side in just a bit. Let me go to Lou. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Lou in Capitol Heights, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm a great grandmother.
Oh, congratulations.
And I'm 70 years old.
Wow, you sound like you're 22, but go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Nice compliment. Well, one of the things I did want to share with you guys and your audience is the fact that most young people today, because of the internet and other things that are going on either in their home or in their neighborhood, they really do not have a support system in place. I know you have a counselor who's on the line with you guys tonight.
Two, actually, yes.
And most of the time, the kids will actually talk to them because their parents don't have a clue as to how to address and to talk to them about relationships, because if you look at the way things are, most younger people are not in good and healthy relationships. And the other thing that I have noticed is that there is just too much information being provided to the kids too soon, and they're not mentally and emotionally ready for it. I had shared information with a young lady, and I told her that there is actually a series of books called Smart Sex Stuff for Kids, and it's written on an eighth grade level. And that actually helps to educate parents and teachers on how to begin these conversations when children start showing an interest in the opposite sex. And it is something that's approved by the National School Supply Association. But I've noticed that a lot of educators are not willing to bring those types of books into the school. I guess they need to get permission.
I would say that because, one parent's willingness to dive right in is another parent's no, you don't.
And then it becomes a big question of boundaries, too.
Right.
And so nowadays we have to be so careful in a time where, you know, you can ask a question and, you know, and the person asking the question can be pulled up for asking something inappropriate to a child or suggesting something. So I do, and I'm familiar with that book as well. And as a therapist, I've seen that book. And I've always was hesitant as a black male therapist, even having a conversation with both a black child or a black male child or black female child, just how would this get recommunicated back to a parent?
Mm.
And could this put me in a risky situation? So what I did in order to counter that, I started having those conversations with the parents.
Right.
And suggested those items and those board books to their parents. Are you struggling with these things? Do you have any concerns about this? And that becomes that working through the circle. You know, and that's how you educate and guide and lead, you know.
Well, Lou, thank you so much for sharing in the conversation. Happy Valentine's Day. You're with your 22-year-old self. thank you so much. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about first loves, first crushes. How can parents help manage the emotional roller coaster for their children? I spoke earlier about that kind of the bad side or the difficult side of this. The first thing that comes to mind, and we've seen this time and time again, particularly with teenagers, modern teenagers, issues and boys with rejection. And I think that is one of the most, I think, for parents of a certain age, it is one of the most surprising and most difficult things to manage or to understand. And this is why I say that. When I was a kid, if there was a girl that I liked and she didn't like me, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But now we see this with boys, teenagers. We even see it with grown men who, you know, try to talk to women and if they are rejected, even if those men are rejected respectfully, that they start calling women out of their name, the conversation takes a 180-degree turn.
Yeah.
How do we talk to boys, first of all, Joseph, about dealing with rejection when there is someone that they like?
I think that a response to rejection is all individualized. And I do know that based on my history, I did see that type of stuff. I did see the B words and the this and the that. And then you start calling them salacious names and everything. So at that point, we start to talk about, how does that feel for someone to say, I don't see that for you and I, and helping them process those emotions? And then what I've done, I've learned to reverse it and go, name some things about you that are great. Name some things about you that you feel like you want to work on or fix with yourself. Things that are fixable. Why is it so important that this particular person likes you? Getting them to be able to understand themselves and then also flipping the coin over to say, this is what makes you great. And maybe that person doesn't see it. So do you think that that person deserves you? You know, reversing it, helping them understand that, and also giving them a space to process their emotions. Unfortunately, we still view that as a weakness. As to say that I'm insecure about something as a man or as a young boy. So we kind of, you know, sometimes we can correlate how many women you're dating with self-esteem, or correlate how many women you're sleeping with, or younger, you know, for that population, how many people they slept with, or, you know, they feel somewhat empowered by that. But then what we need to do is help them be able to process the way it feels to not be liked by someone or to be rejected. I always say this when it comes to girls. My first bullies were females. I didn't realize that they liked me. You know?
Those love taps become a little rough sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was getting beat up by girls, and I didn't know that she had a crush on me.
Yeah.
Yeah. fourth grade, you know?
Yeah, Aisha, what is that? That whole, and I want you to comment on the rejection piece too, but Joseph just brought up something that's really, really, you know, interesting. In some of our, you know, our younger preteen children, where they don't really know how to express that they like someone. And so this has been going on since, you know, boys and girls have been boys and girls. You know, what is that?
So I think all of us just have been poorly socialized and have not really taken time to develop an emotional vocabulary. And we have so much more access to words now and understanding what words mean as the vocabulary continues to expand.
Absolutely.
In the ways that we use them socially. And so not waiting until people are teenagers to even start having these conversations, but when you start teaching your toddler how to communicate, when we say use our words, we have to give them words to be able to use.
Absolutely.
And so as they are doing that, as they are developing their vocabulary, we have to ensure as parents, guardians, caregivers, educators, etc., that we are providing the vocabulary for them so that as they are getting to be older and more mature, they are navigating the ability to express themselves without having to do it the way we were all poorly trained to start to learn, well, somebody hit you, that's because they like you. That's terrible.
Yeah.
That is absolutely terrible and confusing, and makes it so that as you get older, you don't even know how to process when that violence shows up in a different kind of way. So we have to start moving away from that, and one way to do that is to begin to grow and develop that vocabulary very early, because too many of us as adults cannot express what it is that we feel right now. So expecting children to be able to do it is ridiculous if we have not taught them how to do so. And to the point of rejection, mm-hmm. I would take that back to early childhood as well. We're waiting for kids to have big, big feelings when they get big, but the truth of the matter is small children are capable of big feelings. Little kids come home from preschool and kindergarten, really, really liking someone in their class. And you start to see gift giving, you know, such as it is at that particular developmental stage.
Yeah.
It shows up very early. We have to pay attention to what our children are showing us, no matter what environment we're engaging them in, so that we can help them to understand how to manage emotions. Everybody does not have to like you.
Yes.
Rejection is a part of life. Standardizing the understanding that these are things that will happen, and then giving people outlets for how to address the feelings that they have and space to process them as well. Because that's not anybody else's responsibility. So that outward projection, calling people out of their name, other
yeah.
sorts of violence, that absolutely, we have to do away with that. And it starts from the way that we socialize our children.
If I may add, Aisha, I'm not sure what's going to be. Yeah, but I will say that look at the relationship that's a hot topic right now. You talk about Krishan Rock and Blueface, the rapper, and the young girl with the missing tooth. You know, they're all over the internet, and you have young people mimicking that. They have this toxic, violent relationship, but then they have a reality show, and you know, she's a star now. She's at Diddy's birthday parties, and we're glorifying this type of interaction, and that's where I'm concerned, you know, because she's a quote-unquote baddie. She's a hot girl, Instagram-type girl with a missing tooth because of a fight. And, you know, this is what we're showing to our youth, and they have access to these things. I don't care how many, you know, parental controls you put in place, they're going to see that somewhere. If it's not on their phone, they're going to see it somewhere. And I'm always, you know, when I worked in the school system as a therapist, I never understood the play fighting thing, you know, between young people. It bothered me because, like you said, when it becomes serious and violent, how do you manage through that? And what are you witnessing at home? Is that a love tap, or is that really the way that you express yourself when you become upset? And these are things that we really got to have conversations with our youth about. And that's where
this
I'm always concerned.
This is absolutely true. I don't mean to cut you off, but I want to make sure that we don't discount the fact that the home environment, wherever that is, whomever they happen to be with, is very important. You can come across a lot of different things out in the world. If you have been given context for those things within your home environment, it is far less confusing. And so you can engage a thing, unfortunately, from an entertainment perspective and not take it on as what you feel will be now aspirational for you. So I can now look at this couple and see whatever it is that they want us to see, because they're presenting themselves on purpose and have achieved a certain amount of status as such, but not actually aspire to be them. I can see where the problematic side of what they're doing shows up because I have been given context for that. Because I grew up listening, it's not quite the same as what we have now, but I grew up listening to music that was very sexual in nature.
Yeah.
But I always had context presented for what I watched,
mm-hmm.
for what I read, for what I listened to, mm-hmm. provided by my parents, who didn't tell me, but who discussed things with me to see where it was that I was at with the things that I was in, that I was consuming, and then helping me to navigate those things. And I'm clear not everybody has that kind of space.
Yeah, you know, it has
their home.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to cut you off, and it definitely has more of a it is hinging on some of our children are at the mercy of what they have to learn, where they can learn it from,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes mm-hmm. they may not get it from home.
Yeah, we've always said,
yeah
you want to get it from home if the home is a safe space, and for the purposes of this conversation, assuming that it is from the, it is a safe space.
Mm-hmm.
If home is a safe space, you don't want your child to learn it, whatever it is, from the streets.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now here's the other thing. We've spoken about crushes and when you like someone, but when you're talking, for example, about teenagers who are in, you know, relationships, and then they break up, and that is the thing that is really difficult. If this is indeed, you know, that first love, going together, this is my high school boo or my middle school, ninth grade boo, whatever. Aisha, you first. How do you help your child manage that first heartbreak?
I think you got to show up with empathy. We've all been there. We know what that feels like. And give space for them to have those feelings. Don't diminish them. Be as supportive as possible, whatever that looks like, right? And so some of that is checking in to ask them, what do they need? And they may not know, but knowing that someone is asking the question can help to spark them figuring it out. And most of the time, we just need a little room to maneuver through those really heavy feelings, and normalizing that all of us go through them in some way. Like the grandmother said earlier, being able to tap into your own stories to bring yourself eye level, as Joseph said earlier, so that your child can see that through your experiences, you are and will continue to be peers of some sort, not at the same time, but you will have this kind of relationship where you know what it is that they're experiencing and you know how bad it hurts and that you will get to the other side.
Well, but if you,
beautiful.
If I'm, you know, a post-adolescent boy and my parent came to me and said, what do you need? I said, I need Quisha. I need Quisha to love me like she did last week.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a space to respond to them, though.
Yeah.
That's an opening to a conversation. What are you missing about Quisha? What did Quisha do for you? And probably avoiding the to you question, but avoid,
right.
what did Quisha do for you that you miss? And what other ways is it possible to recognize those gifts in yourself and to see where they may also exist in others around you? And that's not because that's going to be the immediate balm. We're clear that it's not going to make it go away right away. But given that space for a child to say, I miss them. Mm. What is it about?
Yeah, you miss that attention.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, you miss it. Now here's my question for you, Joseph, because, and I had this conversation earlier today. I remember when, you know, I was a teenager and I was talking to my godfather and talking about a girl that I, you know, I'd broken up with, and I was, you know, an older teenager, mm-hmm. And I was feeling a little down. I wasn't falling apart, but I remember his words were very simple. He said, there'll be another.
Oh.
He said, don't worry about it. You know, and I think on the face of it that may sound dismissive, mm-hmm. but I remember hearing in that statement that there is light at the end of this dark emotional tunnel.
Right.
And he was saying, Don't worry about it. You have a long life to live, mm-hmm. and there will be other Keishas, or Keishas. There will be other Keishas,
Tammys.
Or Donnas, or what have you. Good advice?
Good advice. Good advice. Good advice, but even in that space, you know, I think it's most important to not minimize someone's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And to minimize them would be to dismiss them. You know, I think that that moment, you had those coping abilities to be able to understand that. There are some people who may not get it.
Yeah.
And
they're so emotionally debilitated from mm-hmm. the loss.
Right. And we've learned that, you know, to say that someone is not experiencing some level of love or what they understand it to be, we have youth that have, you know, hurt themselves because of rejection or because of breakups. And so we got to be able to meet them where they are, understand where they are, and not minimize those emotions. And then also see what works with that child. Just like Aisha said, what do you need right now? And if they say that they need that person, we have to unpack that a bit too. I just found it to be interesting. I'm not trying to shift it, but, you know, I had a client, an adult woman who has a teenager, and, you know, she was like, "Mom, what happened to your boyfriend?" She said, "He ghosted me." And the mother was really depressed. The daughter was able to recognize that. And the daughter's response was, "Mom, that ain't never happened to you before." You know,
so
the teenager right. had been ghosted several times, and exactly. the mother was experiencing this for the first time and was in a severe depression. And so it became a situation where it becomes, my daughter's now assisting me through this. And the daughter told her, "Well, Ma, you got to start posting on social media, get dressed, let's go somewhere, let's have fun. Even if it's not true, just post it," mm-hmm. you know. And that was a coping ability. I mean, it was a bit dishonest, but hey, you know, if this is going to make you feel better, let's try to do things to improve you. Same with a child.
I think that doesn't sound like too bad advice.
I don't
even
think
for,
so, yeah.
For a teenager, you know, pick yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to school, you know, mm-hmm. You know, wipe your eyes. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
We all have been through this. And I think that way you don't minimize their feelings,
yeah.
but let them know that there is another great big red heart at the end of this dark tunnel, but mm-hmm. you may have to drive a little bit farther.
Right. And parents, you know. parents, caretakers, work through your trauma, because what's going to happen is that you may hear something that may trigger you.
Or your child. Just make you mad.
Yeah, it's going to make you mad. It may trigger you. It may open up a door of something that happened with your daughter's father or your son's father that they're now experiencing. So you have to be able to check to see, where are you? Is this my stuff or am I helping my child? You know, so we have to be able to work on those things as well.
What about that, Aisha?
Mm. Well, I think that's an excellent point. We have to remember that as caregivers, we are the child's first teacher, but we're not always the best teacher. So I think also having a network of other adults around who you trust to navigate your child with you, your village, if you will, bringing those people in to assist in this process.
I love that. I love it. Yeah.
I only have a few minutes left. Some final thoughts about children and first loves, Joseph?
Any advice for the children?
No, for the parents.
For the parents.
For the parents.
This is the advice that I have as a mental health therapist, licensed 20 years. I'm going to quote a legend, Miss Erica Badu. "Baby, brace yourself. Protect yourself. Check yourself. Face yourself."
Mm.
That's the best advice.
Yeah, and I really like that, especially the check yourself and protect yourself. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt, you definitely have to protect yourself even as you go through this rite of passage. Aisha, some final thoughts from you for the parents.
My encouragement is to show up with your softer side so that we don't encourage others to grow into these hardened selves and these hardened shells as they go through this love journey in life, because too many of us get to a place where we put up walls because we're afraid to feel real feeling.
Mm. I like Ooh. That. Well, I wanted to also remind our listeners that we have a very special Daily Drum tomorrow, to love and to cherish, how to really make marriage work. It's in partnership with WHUT-TV. We've got a great conversation
I'm there.
About love, marriage, resilience.
Mm.
You don't have to talk about it just on Valentine's Day or Valentine's week, but I really look forward to that. Aisha, thank you so very much. Joseph, thank you again. Thank you. I appreciate you coming in. And look, happy Valentine's Day to both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both.
All right. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, February 14th, Valentine's Day. I'm Harold Fisher.